Because looks are everything. Because looks are everything. Because looks are everything. Get down, get
down. The Autobrite Direct Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Jill. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, yeah. So welcome to another Autobrite podcast. And this is a very, very special podcast. Do you know why?
I haven't got a clue.
Because we've got some very, very special guests
in
with us today, which is, yeah, we're really, really excited. So, number one, guest number one, would you like to introduce yourself?
How are you doing, everyone? I'm Bobby Thompson. I race for Autobrite Direct with Miller's Oils at Team Hard Racing. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Lively crowd we've got today.
In the small truck. So, guest number two.
I'm Jack Butel, and I'm racing for GoFix and AutoAid.
Hey. But yours is a bit longer than actually.
Yeah.
So welcome guys, welcome to the Autobrite podcast.
Thank you.
We're Oulton Park this weekend, very, very exciting. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I think we are. We're coming into a round here that is more of a chassis circuit, which is one point that we've been talking about all year. We're really, really strong at across the whole team. We know we've got arguably one of the best chassis on the grid. So, hopefully I didn't put my foot in my mouth there, but I think we're ready for it, aren't we, Jack?
I'm massively ready. It's always, like you say, we've been saying about how good this chassis is. We've always been let down by other things. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously, how the Hyundai compares to this. We struggled massively last year. So hopefully this year, with the chassis we've been going craving about, it will perform this weekend.
It's exciting.
Fabulous. Can't wait.
And of course, so Oulton Park is our home
circuit. Yeah.
We're just about 35 minutes away, that's all.
Yeah.
It's great. It makes a change.
Yeah,
traveling all the way down to Brands Hatch and
Thruxton.
Well, that's my closest. So.
So anyway, thanks for joining us, guys. So we've got some questions for you guys. Quite different questions as well. There's a good mix of questions. So get ready to answer some of our insane questions.
Let's go.
So we basically had like a brainstorm at work, see what questions would you ask a touring car driver if you could. So these are the ones we caught with.
I should have these work.
So the first one is more towards you, Bobby.
Yeah.
So we've done a bit of research. We've gone back in time.
Oh, God.
And we've noticed that sort of more or less from the beginning, especially from the VW era. I sound like I know what I'm talking about. Practically stayed with Team Hard, pretty much. I know you had a bit of a break a couple of years ago. But why Team Hard? Why is it important to stay with a team? Because we've heard other drivers going on about consistency being important. Why?
For me, I come on to this Tocker weekend, the touring car weekend, not really having a clear path of knowing what I was going to do. At the start, I come on to this weekend doing the Formula 4 Championship, which is now called the Formula 4 Championship, and run out of money, as a lot of race drivers do, and had nowhere to go. And some way or another, I can't quite remember how, I met the bald man with the earring, the team boss. And
good description.
He's the man that makes it all happen. And at the start, I'll be honest, I thought it was all too good to be true. You know, he was willing to really help me out. And in motorsport and any sport or general life, if someone's really being nice to you and helping you out too much, you question it, especially in a sport where it requires a lot of money. Mm. And I'd done my first year with him, you know, long story short, got into VW Cup, and we had a cracking year. He taught me a lot, a hell of a lot of stuff that I even use now, and I use him when I coach people as well. We've done a year, had a really great year. I then had a year away because I got a good offer that I couldn't refuse with teaming up with another driver. And for me, it was just cost the whole time. How could I do the sport I love, but was able to do it a little bit cheaper than, you know, remortgaging the house each year? So, and then, you know, naturally me and Tony got back together, and it's been like that pretty much since. we've sat with the team for such a long time. We've had our bad years, but look at us now. These next last year and this year, and I predict the next couple of years as well. You know, you've 100%. Got to we're going the right way.
Yeah, definitely.
Certainly moving in the right direction. Anyway, so yeah, pretty much to you then, Jack.
So this question's for you, Jack.
Thanks.
So you started touring cars in 2020, which was in the middle of the pandemic.
Nightmare.
So our question to you is, how does it compare? What difference does it make when there's no fans, no spectators, to all of a sudden you've got tens and thousands of fans watching and supporting you? How does it change?
It's massive, and Bobby will say the same thing. Like, the crowd is, I think, that makes touring cars touring cars. When we were in COVID, it just didn't feel the same. You've been watching touring cars since I can remember, and you always see the fans getting the autographs and engaging with us.
Yeah.
Not having that there, I think, was a big step of touring cars that it missed. And then obviously 2021, we did the whole going round on the lorry and then waving to the fans, but you just didn't get that engagement that you do when you go to an autograph session. And then at the end of 21, we started having the fans come into the garages and interact with them again. And I think that was the big thing, is the interaction between everyone was missed.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we were there, weren't we, during COVID? And it was very strange being like, there was just us and nobody else there. It was really very strange.
I never forget Media Day.
So I wasn't there.
Until you were in there. Yeah. At Silverstone. I never forget that. It was just, there was just the drivers and some of the teams, but obviously most of them weren't. There's only so many numbers that were allowed to go, but it was just like a ghost town. It was
I can imagine.
What year was that? Weird. 21 or 2020?
Was that
21? Well, 2020, I remember seeing this thing that was all on the internet and the news, and you thought, oh, this is a miles away. It's not even.
It's
never going to come to England.
And then I remember the day after Media Day. That was it. Race season gone.
Yeah.
And
21
drinking
was
beer
quiet.
In the garden.
Very strange.
Strange times.
Had lovely weather though.
We did. I think that's the best summer we've actually. To be fair, it's quite hot now.
Fabulous.
Bernie, so I've got a question for you both then. why do you do it?
For me,
I mean, there's the much return. You know, why do you do touring cars?
I'll answer it as just motorsport in general. I think it's pretty obvious why we want to do touring cars. It's the biggest series in Europe for fan base, potential for it. You know, you can go and do GT stuff, but unless you're paying or going with a wealthy guy, no one's giving free drives.
Yeah.
Where here, there is ways you can get in. And if someone likes you and you do a cracking job, it's a very specialist touring car. It's its own little thing. Motorsport in general, why do we do it? I mean, you look up and down this grid, there's not one normal driver and no one's got a trade. And, you know, if you're good at something, you know, crack on. I mean, there was a good few years ago when I was about 18, 19, and it was looking like what was going to happen next for me in motorsport. I had no clue. That was when I started thinking, God, have I got to go and get a trade or something? I don't have a clue what I'm going to do. My whole mindset's been about this and this only. But, we all do it because we love it, you know. Just whatever your goal is, whether it finishing one up than you've done all year or winning a race or whatever, you know, achieving that is a better feeling than anything in the world. It's a crazy way to
live life.
You live weekend by weekend and... it's a shame there's not more footage or more TV money spent on what us guys do away from the track.
Yeah,
it's very, I think, Jack, you'll probably agree with me. A lot of people think you just, go away, live a normal life, come back and do these 10 weekends, which is a normal life. You know, we're not complete superstar rock stars, but there is, it is a crazy way. You know, I mean, I've only slept in my bed 3 times last month. So.
Yeah, wow.
It's a crazy way to live whilst you can.
Agree. Is it too late for Mark to start?
Mark, I've sort of dropped with you, mate.
I'm ready. When anybody wants to take me on, I'm there.
He's asking Tony, but nothing ever seems to happen.
You haven't driven one?
Well, totally car.
Yeah.
No. Should
have a go.
Yeah. I'm guessing
we
it's
need to make that happen.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Good fun. Really good fun.
I mean, probably a lot different from what I'm used to at the moment. Very raw. But I'd love that. That'd be epic.
it's seeing it out on track and then experiencing it's like completely different. Yeah. It's definitely thrilling. Mm. But I'd say everything you've driven and we've driven, this is a different league of racing.
Yeah. Special.
It is.
So I've got this kind of questions for both of you, really. It's quite a good question. So if you weren't a racing driver, what would you be then? And what profession?
Well, I know what I would do. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Well, obviously for you, yeah.
I don't know. If I want to drive, I'd still be doing this. You know, I really would. I've got a passion for the sport. It's easy to fall out of love with it sometimes when you look at it like a job, because you've got to. It is my job. So, like everyone does in their jobs, you do fall out of love with it sometimes, but you get back on the ground because I've got such a passion for this sport. So even if I wasn't doing touring car itself, I'd be doing club racing and still doing something there. You know, I've got a passion for it and I'd still be doing it in some way or another.
You don't fancy stacking shelves, stacking products on shelves.
These arms don't stack shelves.
I mean, if you do, we need some people that are working coming up us.
Well,
I would obviously work for Dad, but if I wasn't and didn't have the motorsport, like Bob said, that is literally what we live and breathe, but I'd probably go out and do some golf, try and make a living out of doing golf. Okay. I love that golf at the moment. So, yeah, if it wasn't for that, I'd be
golfer,
trying to find some balls in some rough.
Fair enough.
The next Tiger Woods. There you go.
Okay, it's my turn.
Your turn.
Okay, so I've got this next load of questions is for both of you, really. So the next one is, who inspired you?
Bobby Thompson.
Bobby. I knew that was coming.
What an inspiration.
Yeah. Go on, you go first, chat.
I think the whole of like the Michael Schumacher era was the main thing that kind of got me going. I think what he achieved and what he did for Ferrari and everyone he raced for, I think was a massive inspiration to go actually. Yeah. And then obviously Lewis managed to get from where nothing to where he's seven-time world champion now. It shows that if you put your mind to it and actually commit to what you're doing, you can pretty much achieve anything. And I tell the kids at karting in Jersey the same thing. If you put your mind to it, you can always achieve it.
Yeah.
I think for me is F1, it's always been such a far distance for me to even look at and dream of going anywhere near. Even as a kid, I want to do it. And the kids I was racing against in karting had that path, but I just knew sort of money, you know, it wasn't happening for me. So it was always touring cars for me. And at the time it was Matt Neilplay, O'Shed, and you know, all the boys, and lucky enough to work with them now. And they help us out. And those guys, they know what they're doing, eh? You know, they've earned a living here racing 10 weekends a year and playing posh bumper cars.
It was back then. We watched a load of old DVDs, didn't we, going back to like 2010, and it was Shadden and Plato, and
even before that as well,
and it was literally bumper cars,
like the Super Touring was proper bumper cars.
Those guys, you know, for me that's where it's at, you know.
So it's a shame it's still not like that. It's a bit now, more rules, and
I don't know, when these on the straights, the first lap it's just chaos, and sometimes it can be chaos. It's, you know, bumper to bumper and get out of the way. And
yeah, exactly. I think you'd see more of it if, cameras and camera crews have got a lot more money and got a lot more modern since then. I think if we had cameras in all the cars, that would
be quite impressive, actually.
Through the roof.
Looking at the footage of that, great.
Well, that kind of leads on to, I'm going to skip a couple.
Okay.
I've written it down at the bottom. It's a little bit controversial.
Great.
We can go back to it, it's fine.
Track limits.
Oh, God.
So
that is a sticky one.
It's caused a few issues, hasn't it, this season?
I mean, I'll start this one off. So, tennis, you play it all around the world. That white line's that white line. Yeah? Football, that white line's that white line. Motorsport, we come to Alton Park, and we're not allowed over a red and white curb by two wheels now. That's the new rule that was brought in 10 days ago, whatever it was. I go and race in America and I can do whatever I like. I race in Europe and they allow me all the track, but just up to grass or gravel or all of the green. It's the only sport where you can just make it up lap by lap. Yeah. Not even track by track, lap by lap. And depending the judge of fact who's watching me, here we've got cameras at Alton Park at turn one that take a picture. I think that's proper. If you've took a picture of me. I've been done. Take it on the chin.
Yeah.
Give it a go next lap. But you know, I've had it before where there's a guy. I'm coaching a guy, and he's driven off the track. He's been caught for it. The judge of fact radios in to the clerk of the course. By the time he's sipped his coffee and written it down and radioed it in, he actually took our next lap, not the original lap that we cut the corner. Next lap was our quicker lap, and that one was taken away, not even the one we had an infringement on. So I'm all for it. Let's fight it and let's do it. Let's all be the same. But
we struggled.
I mean, I could rant on here about this, but I mean,
that's where we are.
Saturday, tomorrow morning, we're going to have 30 touring car drivers in a truck just behind us and have a briefing on track limits and where not to be and all the rest of it, and they'll state it all. We're all going to talk about it for about an hour, and then we're all going to drive off the track out there, and nothing gets done about it. Or 25 will get away with it, and 5 will get done. It's just either I'm all for it and have cameras everywhere and have it really almost sillily policed.
Very inconsistent.
Yeah.
Like last year, at least we knew we could use the green, and everyone was up to the green. Where this year, like, we go to Thruxton and you go through Church, and it's like the line was, what, 6 inches?
Yeah.
It's nothing. And you're doing 130 mile an hour going through Church, and you come out and there's a 6-inch curb that we're allowed to use. It was a bit silly. Yeah. So I think how we had it last year was actually all right. We could use the green up to the green.
Mm.
And like Bobby's saying, it's the inconsistency all over the world is, well, this championship can do this. If everyone was the same, I think everyone would be understanding.
Yeah. So has it changed again then? Just said it's changed.
Yeah, so it was. So if you look at an exit curb, and that's another thing, they don't care about apex curbs. So
take all
turn
in one
here, for example. Turn one here. It's quicker to take a load of curb at the apex. That's the only tip I'm giving. you can take a load of apex curb, but on the exit you have the red and white traditional that you see at racetracks around the world.
Yep.
Then you have a green bit of tarmac the other side of that. We used to be allowed to have two wheels on the green, as long as there's two wheels on the track within the white lines,
they wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Now it is two wheels just off the side of that red and white, which gets tricky because you go to some tracks where it's not red and white and it's a different colour and it's all it's just so messy. Yeah. So messy. It works for MSV tracks. We're at an MSV track now, the company that owns Alton Brands, Donington. It works for their tracks, but when you go somewhere a bit different, Knockhill, and they might have different colours, they have grass, but you soon know when you're off the track there. But yeah, I'm all for it. Let's just make it a bit more consistent and not get too silly. I think the best thing that can happen is they probably make this look a bit silly, this rule, and some people get the wrong side of the stick, and then the governing body realise how stupid it is, and they change it within the winter time.
I was going to say, because actually I don't think the touring car... like Alan and Ian are actually for it. I think it's a thing that's come in, and they're a bit against it as well. Okay. But it's definitely a one that we all are not very favoured of. I agree.
That's why it was on the list. Go on, you can ask the next one.
We thought you'd love that one. Where are we?
So you've messed them up now. That's
I know, totally messed them up.
So young driver initiative. Scholarships, are they important to racing?
Yeah, I think it's a massive step to get you to where you want to go, whether it's going single-seater racing or going into touring car racing. I think it's a massive step to get you into it, because you might not like it. You might go, actually, I really want to do it, but go out a couple of times and not enjoy it. I think it's a good stepping stone to start your racing. And I never had the opportunity when I was younger to get into it, and now all these new scholarships are coming up. I think it's a phenomenal experience to even just experience it and find out if you actually do enjoy it.
So what is the best kind of way to start? Is it karting? If you're young
I started really, I don't know what age you started karting, but I started karting when I was 14 and then kind of got to where I've got now by doing different various things. But yeah, karting, I mean, it's not the best in Jersey. We have an oval with a couple of corners in on a road track. So, I definitely learnt the hard way.
Making up for it now, though, aren't you? Your karting escapades.
Trying to, yeah. It's improved a bit in Jersey since then. We've got a proper track now. So,
Next one. So, if you could choose anybody to race against from the Super Tour era, who would he be? Race against.
I'll let you start this one.
It's got to be Matt. Matt's still got fire in his belly. Matt Neal.
Yeah.
It's got to be a British driver.
I would agree.
Yeah, it's got to be Matt Neal. Yeah, he's got, you know, like I say, he's working with us. He'll be here probably in a couple of hours as well. He'll, you know, he'll go through some stuff. And when he's talking about it, he's got so much passion. He's a fan of the championship himself, fan of the sport. So he's got so much passion. And I think he's got unfinished business.
You think he'll get back in a car?
I'd like to see it. Yeah.
without a doubt, he'll be getting back in a car.
Because I know a lot of the fans, when you see him on social media, they would love to see Matt Neal and Jason Plato back out in cars racing.
Because I don't think Neal's done the hybrid.
Well, I don't know. Matt would be back. Jason, not this year, but last year when he was on the grid, I would find myself having a beer with him now and then, and he's the same. He's 21 in his head. There's stories about that guy. I love him. I really love him. But he's a character.
Yeah, I've read his autobiography, and that was he's a lad. Yeah. He is a lad. But it was good. It was good. Go on, you can answer the next one.
Okay, so you've been asked this one a million times, but not on our podcast. So, what's your favourite track and why?
In the world or in touring cars?
In the world, anywhere on the moon.
That'd be quite cool.
I've got two that I can't get out of Spa and Abu Dhabi. I've done well in both of them, and they've been one of the greatest tracks that I think I've ever raced at.
I've been Spa.
It's great. Yeah, it's great, especially when you go for a Rouge flat and like LMP3 car. It's crazy, absolutely crazy the amount of downforce you get through there. And at first you look at it and the hills like this, you're like, you got no chance. And then Abu Dhabi's just, I think because of the whole thing of Abu Dhabi, it just presents itself in a way that you can't really not like it.
Wow.
There's a track called Bilsterberg in Germany. That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's like a members circuit. Okay. So I don't think they race there, but it's like a man-made Nürburgring, which is absolutely incredible. So there's real steep highs and massive drops. Yaz Marina, Abu Dhabi, that place is incredible. It's you start testing at 8 o'clock at night.
It's crazy.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
What do you do the car in? Not in Abu Dhabi.
I've done it in GT4.
Wow.
At Bilsterberg for Radical. We were over there for a week, and some lucky guy bought five different Radicals and needed a couple of coaches over there to help him. And
you were like, yep,
funny story is we got there, and Radical, this guy's buying five different cars. So naturally, a manufacturer would think, is it for a race team? We'll bring staff out there. We got out there, and for five cars, we probably had about 10 mechanics, I don't know. He took three coaches, all the bosses went, got over there. There's one guy, and he's done an hour in one of the cars. And goes, I'll take them all. And we were booked to be there for like 4 days. And we had the best 4 days. Everybody just used it for testing, and I've got a lot of track time,
So next one. What are your favourite racing conditions, wet or dry?
I touring car is obviously Gal, when he pumps all the clouds into the air to make it rain every weekend. He knows how to make a dodgy old touring car weekend, and it's looking like that's how Sunday's going to be here. It's going to be 26 degrees, but absolutely peeving down. So I love those touring car races where I don't mind when it's wet or if it's dry like it is today, but I love those ones when it's like slicks, is it not? And then you have a guy that's on slicks but it's got a good tyre temp so you can attack the guys on a wet, and it's those sort of conditions are cool.
I would agree. I was going to say them.
Yeah.
I think we had it last year at Brands where some of us were on slicks, some of us were on wets. And you could see, I think it was Butcher, that he dropped back at the start, but then came through and finished seventh or something. Mm-hmm. It's them conditions that it's cool.
Really spices it up, doesn't it?
Mm. It gives everybody else a chance, I think, as well.
It does. Massively. We had it at Donington. Spiced it. Everyone went out on slicks.
That's
and then it. Nick decided to box
right first. Decision.
Right decision. And
Fantastic.
Yeah, it does massively spice the grid up.
So something that really, really annoys me in BTCC. So
how long have we got?
amongst the lots of other things. But when we're watching it, you know, you've got this irritating driver behind you, flashing lights.
Yeah.
And it winds me up. I'm not even in the driver's seat and it winds me up. But how does it make you feel?
Yeah, I'm all for it. Love it. Bring it on. It's like a little disco.
So it puts the driver off, but... Yeah. As long as I'm not getting it done, I don't mind.
Yeah. It's from a TV point of view, because I see a lot of these comments online. Why is he flashing his lights or the rest of it? And it's not done in the same way as it is on the road.
Mm. Right, okay. Because they just think they want you to move out the way.
Yeah, just like get out the way.
No, don't look at it like that. When you're in car, you're all for it. If especially it's last lap and you can actually see a driver cracking a little bit. It's really hot in their car. It's as hot as you are in your car, but they're under pressure and. When you're nice and hot, you're making the odd decision that's wrong, especially how hot it gets in these things. Oh, it's ridiculous. So,
that little bit, like looking in the mirror, just puts you off for that split second.
You'll notice the guys in endurance racing will do it if people are in a battle in a lower class that the faster boys are coming through. In this, it's just to put you off. Just it's so off. Yeah. Easy to make a mistake. From watching on the telly, it looks like that. What's the word? It looks like. We have got complete control, which we have. Yeah. But these things, what's the word I'm trying to put? You're so close. There's such a fine margin between being on a decent lap to not being in the wind.
Yeah. Mm.
Especially after about lap 4, lap 5, lap 6, when the tyres are dropping off. Mm-hmm. You make one mistake and it's a snap of overseas. So if you can introduce someone to do that, you're laughing.
It's just tactics, really, isn't
yeah.
it?
Mm. Yeah.
Just trying to put them off.
Yeah. Mm. As a driver, I love it. Keep them flashing.
Every lap.
And the cars at us.
Yeah. The lights.
So, obviously, when the cars are, you know, you've done quali, you go out for your first race and you come back in for the second race. What settings can you tweak on these cars?
So we can adjust anything we want to, pretty much. I think everything apart from third gear down in the gearbox, you can pretty much change. Obviously, the engine we can't touch, but we can do camber.
So you can adjust like the ratio of gears then?
Yeah, so we can do fourth, fifth, and sixth. We're allowed to change, but from third down, it's a championship rule. You cannot change. It's
right.
I don't know if it's locked or, we just can't touch it. But pretty much everything else, we can experiment. Say if Bobby found that I was running an 800 spring, say for instance, and he was struggling with understeer. You might be able to put that on or change cambers or whatever. It's literally, we can do whatever we want between races. It's not like part firme, you can't touch the car.
Yeah.
Where I think some championships you can't. Well, F1 you can't now, can you, between sprint races?
For us, we can change absolutely everything. And because the track time, although it looks a lot, you know, we don't get any. We get two sessions tomorrow morning. You miss one of those sessions, you're being just half an hour behind everyone in terms of track running, you are really far behind. I said to you guys at SNET, I think we missed FP1. You know, you're going, your FP1 is everyone's FP2, they're going for quali runs. I'm still learning, and not so much myself, but the guys are still learning setup wise going into quali. And that's the same for M Sport that do our motors. You know, they're trying to get as close to the boost figures and all the figures we're allowed to get as close to, and without track time, we can't.
For all these settings that you can potentially alter, tweak, you've just got to be really careful what you actually mess with.
Well, so now, more than ever, the last 2 years, I'd say touring cars equally, if not more, about engineer.
Yeah.
An engineer can carry a driver. Yeah. And I think you see that up and down the grid. Mm. An engineer can really carry a driver and also
you can have a bad weekend if... Even if the spring's out, say for instance, it really massively affects your weekend.
Well, before I pass this over to you, I've got one more question. I'd like, because this is my question. I think it's pretty good.
Best one, yeah.
It is. So, when you're racing, right? Because I know when you're steering wheel, you've got lots of buttons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you ever pressed the wrong button?
Yeah, I have.
Is that a yes then? Yeah,
many times.
Yeah, Donington actually this year on the start procedure. So the start procedure is quite lengthy. I don't know, do you use the P2P button? Yeah. So when we start, we've got a button to hold our brake so we can at least get off it and then have the clutch and the throttle, and then we have this button called P2P, so it basically cuts off the turbo to help us get off the line. I didn't press that button. I put the pit limiter on. So I thought, I got a really good launch, and then it just went straight into pit, into the limiters, and I was going down the straight, going blah, 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 which was the most embarrassing thing I think I've ever done on a start. But yeah, it's yeah.
I mean, there's that many buttons, I'd just get super confused. I'd just be pressing them. It's like a yeah. PlayStation remote slide. Yeah.
I think once you get used to it and understand, I think the first time we got it last year, I think it was a bit trying to figure out where everything was, and everyone was complaining that we had to hold the hybrid. That was a bit of an issue. I think we've come in this year with a fresh understanding. Okay, this is where everything is. This yeah. is what all the buttons do. Apart from the start, but we'll let that one slip.
Yeah. I've had it before.
Don't worry, we won't say nothing about that.
No.
I had it before at the start this year. We had a start procedure. So when we get to the grid, we change to a different screen on our dash, a different map for the as we set off. And all the teams would be doing their different variant of this. So different screen, different map. I get there, you build brake pressure up on a brake button, so it's like a handbrake but on a finger button.
Yeah.
And then you have this P2P that reduces turbo, like a launch control, if you want to call it that. You go flat out on the throttle, so I'm feeling good here. We get one practice start in FP2. I come off what I thought was the brake button, but I just come off the boost reduction button, and the car just died because I went. And it's like pulling away with your handbrake up. And I knew exactly what it was. They swapped the buttons around because it was easier for gear shifts and other bits and bobs. And it's my fault. Just in the moment, forgot and sat on the grid like a plum. And,
so embarrassing, isn't it?
Lucky enough, I got it started and got going and didn't lose too much-ish. I mean, I went to the back of the grid, but...
Yeah. There's a lot to think about, though, isn't there?
Yeah, I didn't realise. I mean, I know there's a lot of buttons on there, but I didn't realise you have to, like, hold it for brake.
Yeah.
Like a handbrake.
It is. It pretty much is a handbrake.
Because you can't roll, obviously, no. If you move and you roll, yeah. you don't, aren't you?
There is an argument, I mean... there is an argument if it's even faster. So you always hold the brake. Some drivers on the grid will just do it on their own, so they'll clutch and pull away like you do on the road, and they are able to do it quicker than launch control. The only thing with that is out of 10 times, you're running a risk of how many, you know. We're with the launch, 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be absolutely bang on.
Yeah. Interesting.
Very.
I like that question.
Are you sure you want to go? There's too many buttons.
Yeah, I do, yeah. I want 40.
Okay, this was my question, because it's puzzled me every time we come and watch you guys. Do the cars have reverse gears?
Yes.
Why don't you use them then? As in, when you go into the, especially at Thruxton, you're coming out of the garage, the tents, and you go into the track, you're being pushed and pulled, and
For them, it's a lot easier to pull it.
Right.
So they don't like us using reverse gear. It's... everything's spinning the wrong way to then get it into reverse. So they prefer, especially like Thruxton, us coming out the garages, it's quicker for them to just pull it. But we did it at the shakedown, we did it snap. We had to turn at the end and use reverse gear. But they don't really like us doing it.
Because most of the time you get pulled backwards, don't you?
So. I've never used reverse gear, and I don't think I've ever seen one.
No.
Yeah, never. Yeah.
Because you're watching the racing, and say if somebody comes off and hits the barrier, slightly hits the barrier, or just comes off, and you think, put it in reverse.
Yeah.
Just put it in reverse.
I wouldn't be surprised if it does just as much damage chucking it in reverse.
Yeah. I suppose because obviously these gearboxes, the race gearboxes, aren't they?
They're not designed to go into reverse, but I guess if you're in a sticky situation, you could put it in reverse.
Yeah.
Whole front before effect.
I didn't realise you had a reverse gear, to be honest.
Yeah. I know where the lever is, but hopefully I never get to
use it.
Okay, we haven't got many questions left now.
That's all right. I was liking it.
So we've heard different people talking about different engines. I think we've had a conversation with you, Bobby, about the different engine manufacturers and what have you. Why are they so different? Because I know you guys have got the M Sport engine.
Yeah.
And other people have got Neil Brown engines. Yeah. Why are they so...
Yeah. So,
a mountain,
I mean, there's some stuff we can say and some stuff we can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as a whole, for across all the four, I think there is different engine manufacturers. They all are very, very on it and they know what they're doing. You know, every engine manufacturer turns up with a group of 30 guys to run a couple of engines. You know, they're how you see Team Hard here, they're their own teams themselves in their own trucks, and you know, they're flat out on it all weekend. Now, the difference of the engines across the pits is, one, there's something down to the teams. That's charge temps and like intake temps. You want everything as cool as possible in that engine bay. Another thing that is what the team, the engine manufacturers work their hardest to get close to is every team down, up and down the pit lane gets their own boost figure. That's so all the cars are, it's called balance of performance, get all balanced exactly the same so we can race nice and close, which obviously Gal does a
amazing,
too good of a job. I wish it was a little bit more open.
Might give us a bit of a chance. Yeah.
And now that's what makes a very good engine builder. And 99% of the time, it's the guys that have been here doing it 20, 30 years. You know,
because I was going to say, M Sport are not a bad engine.
No.
They know what they're doing. Look at what they're doing in WRC. Yeah. They're not a bad engine. The problem is, I think they've been in for 2 years. Where, like, the Neil Browns, the Mountunes, you got Swindon, have been in the paddock for years and know how to get a good engine. I think it's just time.
Experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I think this was your question. I'll ask it.
Must be a good one, then.
It's about the tyres, the different type of tyres that you use during a race day. And basically, how long does a tyre last? Now, we spoke with somebody at Thruxton. It was Dan, I believe, Dan Lloyd. And he was on about the hard tyre at Thruxton. He reckons that that is really only going to last about 5 laps.
Until he starts dropping
degrading
off.
Degrading and losing performance.
At Thruxton, to get the best out of the tyre, you get a slow out lap, one push lap, and then the second lap feels better, but it's nowhere near as good. But I don't think that's a tyre degrading. I think that's a heat issue. The hard gets too hot.
Yeah.
Here, we're running this weekend, we're running the soft and the hard. They used to run the soft and the medium here, but you didn't see too much of a difference. The guys on mediums could fight the guys on a soft. If they kept them around them for about 5 laps, the soft was having that drop-off, so then the mediums could come and attack again. Where now, this weekend, you're going to see two races. You're going to see guys on a soft and guys on a hard. I think here, again, that the hard doesn't really degrade. I think it just gets too hot. Mm. The soft does degrade.
Yeah. quite interesting, because it's all about tactics, isn't it? You know,
massive.
Obviously, you don't know what the car in front of you is going to choose until you get on the grid. And, you know, it's quite interesting.
I think you'll see it more here, like that Bobby was saying. I think you'll notice it massively, especially with the hard. The hard's going to help at the later stage, where the softs are going to massively help on the front. We've got a lot of stop starting here.
Yeah,
that's where the softs is going to kill them.
I love this idea.
So, do you get to use that set of tyres again once you've done that race, or is that it? Are they done then?
Yeah. So this one's a bit of a weird weekend because we've got softs and a hard. So normally, let's say this was a medium, we was running mediums all weekend, and last weekend we was running mediums. The teams would pick over their best set from the weekend, from quali through to race three. And that's what a carryover is. You bring them over to this weekend, and those are your FP1 tyres. So you usually run on your FP1, they're not very good tyres. That's the same for the whole grid. Unless someone had a problem at the last round, then you have a good set for FP1. Then you'd go your better set of FP carryovers for FP2, and then new tyre quali run.
You can use them again, but just not in a race weekend. Like, you can use it for testing and stuff like that.
Oh, right, okay.
If you're swapping the tyres, aren't you, through quality or whatever, you go out, you come back in, and then you swap over.
So you side the tyres.
Scrubbing them.
So you always go out with the tyres not in the correct position, the opposite side, to generate the heat for the rears. Because going out on a set of cold rears is not a very nice feeling.
So you can go out and not cross, but the way the touring car is, and it takes so much life out of a tyre. You could run these tyres on a track day car and they'll last five days.
Yeah.
They'll do 5 days on them. It'd be absolutely fine. But the touring car takes so much life, the dampers and the whole suspension, the whole car takes so much life out of the tyre that's why a drop-off is fairly fast. And that's why these engineers, their job, to try and make it last 4 laps, 5 laps, 6 laps
during the
race. So, the old tyre thing this weekend is going to be absolutely huge, like we said.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Really am looking forward to it.
Interesting.
I'll let you read the last one in a minute, but we have skipped one.
We have.
For Jack. So, this year, Jack Sears, is that in your
goal? Oh, that's gone.
Goal?
Oh, yeah. It was the aim. And then we've had a really bad start to the season. just issues we've had, where not actually the team issues, we've just had other issues that have caused problems, whether it's been contact with another driver or something. But the Jack Sears was the aim. But I think we're like 100 points already off, and we're only halfway through. It was an aim coming in, and like the reason why I moved here is Bobby won it last year. That was the aim, to come here and try and repeat what Bobby did, because the car is phenomenal. The chassis, everything last year proved that the car is good, and that's why Dan's moved as well. Mm-hmm. We proved that, well, Bobby proved last year that the car is worthy to be up where it is and fight for podiums, and that's where we should have been. Obviously, it's not been on my side, but hopefully
there's always
next
year. The season, and there's always next year. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I still want to come out with the season having a trophy in my hand. I think that's still the aim. Yeah. It's just there's some good competition this year in the Jack Sears, and everyone's stepped up their game.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to sneak another question in. Sorry.
Bonus question.
You're going to get a win this year, Bobby.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that. I mean,
it's about time, isn't it?
I think we've been dealt the wrong cards.
We've been thinking about it as well, Bob.
Jesus, Bob.
I think we've really been dealt the wrong hand of cards this start of the year. Round one, we still had last year's settings on the car, as Barry, my engineer, joined very late. Mm-hmm. So he just went the same as last year. So round one was, for me, exactly the same as last year. You know, that 8th, 9th, 10th to 12th battle, round about there. Round two, in the mix, weren't we, all weekend? Yep. That's how every round should be. Snetterton, I didn't say it on the weekend at ITV because it makes you sound really silly, and I don't want to, you know, badmouth anything about it, but running a camera in the car, not many people know this, kills you.
Really?
The Some of the manufacturer teams' cars would be very, very light, and they run about 20 kg light, so when they put the camera in, they're able to position weight around the car so it doesn't affect you. Our cars are, well, my car's about 6 kg light. So once I put the, bear in mind the camera's 9 kg, something like that, maybe 10.
Wow.
So and it's mounted up at chest height in the car, which is massive. So that was Snet for us. And I could not believe the difference between Snet and then, was it Fruxton after?
Yeah.
It was almost like, turn up to Fruxton, straight in again, straight up in that top five, weren't we?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I had a little issue myself that ruined us in quali. And then race one, we moved up through the grid. Race two, what was we, 6th, 7th, back in the mix again. Mm. Then she went bang again. So I think we've been dealt the wrong hand. I think coming in, hopefully we, you know, this is our luck changes this weekend. We've got a car that can fight in the top five. And
definitely.
We're the underdog, and we can give it to the manufacturers. So, I'm still excited. You know.
Not as excited as well.
I don't know.
I just want to ask this one question, I think, before we wrap it up. Yeah. Something I want to know, and I know a couple of the lads at Autobrite want to know this as well. So you've got BTCC cars and you've got TCR cars.
Jack over there from Jack.
The difference.
Jack's looking at the deaths there. Well, I don't know what the difference is. What is the difference between these two?
So I've only seen a TCR car. I've not driven it, but I know the main thing massively is they've got flappy paddles. We've got a sequential.
Are they more of a leaner BTCC car?
I think it's a road car.
Yeah.
It's a road car shell. If you look at our car, for the people just listening, so I'll try and explain this the best way. So where your feet are in a road car, that's chopped off. Touring car. The only bit that is a road car is the roof lining and the roof
skin.
From where my feet are, that's cut off, and a cage is put in the front, and those cages are the same whether you're in a BMW, Cooper or Astra. The behind us, where the boot is, that comes off the road car as well, but then the subframe is bolted underneath that, again the same across all the cars. Where in a TCR car, it is a road car with a cage in it. They look the same, they look similar, they smell similar, they don't drive the same. No, they're nowhere near as hard on the tyre, nowhere near as hard on the driver. They can do similar lap times. I was coaching a guy in one for a couple of years. They're actually a lot faster, I think, up into like fifth gear. They feel, I'm really amazed how quick it is, but then top speed is really flat compared to what a touring car is.
So what engines are they then?
They're still 2 litre turbos, and each manufacturer still makes their own engine.
The
hard thing is with it is here we've got regulations, and even if you build a brand new car now, all right, you can try and engineering things change and engineers get better and stuff gets, you know, a little better as years go on. But in all the rules are the same, whether you made a car now or 5 years ago, they should be the similar pace. In TCR, a car, for example, I think it's the VW. It was one of the first cars to come out. The rules have stayed the same, but then road car manufacturers have made their cars, they know they're going to turn it into a TCR car and made the road car more adaptable for the TCR car. So you could have bought this TCR car 5 years ago to go racing as a team, and then more stuff comes out, and you know, in the car manufacturing world, and there's a Audi that's next year that's 2 seconds up the road. So they do have balance of performance like we do, but it's
I don't know, it's quite interesting.
So it's no threat to BTCC, because everybody reckons it's the new BTCC.
Look at it like DTM and BTCC. DTM didn't care about touring car. German touring cars. German touring. So yeah, it's not even. It's its own thing. You can see drivers jump across.
Mm-hmm. Well, broadly, hasn't he?
Yeah. And maybe drivers the other way. But look at it like, it's hard to explain. Look at it like its own thing. I mean, touring car is its own thing. The only coincidence is they look fairly similar.
Because in Europe, TCR is massive.
Yeah.
It's a very big series in Europe. Mm.
I've always looked at the cars. I thought, thinking, that looks very familiar. That does it looks the same as, you know, as our cars.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I didn't actually know what the differences were. So interesting.
I think three of us have learnt something there.
I think so.
Okay.
Fountain of knowledge, Mr. Thompson over there. I think that's it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks.
I'd like to quickly apologise to everyone for the old alarm. I mean, just maybe reinstates we are in a race driver paddock.
Yes,
so
we are, yeah.
There's all sorts of noise and testing going on from support series.
Yeah,
so.
There is, yeah. So thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
I know you're busy, guys. And
that's been good. It's been something different to do on a Friday, to be honest. It's nice to
we always
have a chat.
We always enjoy a podcast. Yeah. You know, we could waffle on forever.
We could.
There's people giving it a go, but there's no one doing this for touring cars. It's a mega idea. And we're on a Friday.
We're going to trademark it right now.
We were here first. That's our thing.
I think it's a good idea.
Take a mic with you.
It's good. It is nice to do something on a Friday. Like Bobby said, we're always here on a Friday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just standing around looking at the team and seeing what we can do. But it's nice to actually do something on a Friday.
Yeah, it's good.
And have a chat.
Yeah.
Educated us all on everything. Yes. Fabulous.
So thanks, guys, and good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good
luck
for
tomorrow.
We'll be cheering
and,
you on.
And Sunday
massively.
For the racing. We hope you do well.
Yeah. Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Okay, then. So that's it for this podcast, everyone. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you again on the next Autobrat podcast. Bye-bye for now.
Cheerio.
Tune in next time to the Autobrat Direct podcast.
Because looks are everything. Down. Get down.